Hello, this is the Polaris Titan Snowmobile Podcast. I am Alvin, aka Dr. Feel Average.
Okay. All right. So it's snowmobiles now. I'm Mike, Too Long Farts, and I'm part of this.
Yep. And the Polaris Titan is the world's most versatile crossover snowmobile. But in this episode, we're going to be talking about Nintendo 64 games and reviewing them so you don't have to. We're also the Faro Wizards. This is good. We got this whole intro thing down now. We know
Yeah, we're the
exactly what we're
most
doing every
versatile
time.
crossover podcast,
Right?
much like that thing you said.
I'm gonna have to start tagging snowmobiles in our podcast. By the way, when I
You...
published this one, it didn't ask any tag words. Usually it does. Weird.
Weird.
Okay.
Weird. You could have waited for the Polaris Snow Cross snowmobile game for that one, but you know what? Better this way. Double
No.
Polaris tags.
Yep, we're gonna pull out the Polaris every single time. Anyway, the game we're reviewing this week is 007, The World Is Not Enough for Nintendo 64. Because they're all for Nintendo 64. That's what we do.
That's the thing we
It's
do.
not just snowmobiles here. Sometimes we do Nintendo 64 stuff too.
Yeah, game review style.
Right. So, yeah.
So let's
I don't
talk
know.
about it.
Do
Let's
you
talk
want
about that
to?
game.
You want to?
No, but that's
Oh.
what we do. So much like Polaris, we're
Okay.
sticking to our agreement, doing what we're good at,
Right.
which
Okay.
is manufacturing snowmobiles and talking about Nintendo 64 games.
Oh, we're making the snowmobiles. Oh, this is
Yes.
good. Okay. Well, at least we'll be making some money then. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, tell me what you know about either this game or Polaris snowmobiles.
This game was published by EA Games October 17th, 2000. It's based on the 1999 film of the same name. So once again, we have a game, movie, game. It was the Pierce Brosnan second GoldenEye movie, I believe. But it's not GoldenEye. It's just the second James Bond film. You know what I'm talking about, people. You wanted this to be GoldenEye and it wasn't. It's the second one. But the film didn't get a very good reception. It was 52 on Rotten Tomatoes, but probably because people just wanted it to be another GoldenEye. And that's what people wanted about this game too. And it wasn't. It was not another
What?
GoldenEye.
It wasn't, but it was, I think it was better than I remember. I
Yeah.
feel like it was better than I remember. I
And it's
think
better than the PlayStation version, which is a double. That doesn't happen very often for you, at least. The PlayStation version didn't even have multiplayer. It was crappy.
yeah. So it
Suck it,
wasn't even,
PlayStation.
yeah. What up? Finally a game that Nintendo 64 did better. Plus,
Yeah.
wasn't this the one with Denise Richards?
I like the movie you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, technically she'd be in the game then too.
I
I
guess
thought it was Denise Richards. Because
well
wasn't her name like Christmas or something like that? Because they made a lot of
no,
Christmas
it
jokes.
was Elektra was the chick thing in this one, but I think no, that was the bad chick. I don't remember who the Bond girl was in this one.
I thought it was.
I'm gonna let you say it's Denise Richards, and we're gonna lean into that for the rest of the episode.
Nope, I'm checking right now because this is important to me. And we do a lot of, oh yeah, Denise Richards' World Is Not Enough. Yep, I was correct. I was correct. And
We
her
should have just
name.
leaned into it. You should have stuck with your guns just like
No,
Polaris
I.
does with their snowmobiles. You should have just went.
It was Dr. Christmas Jones. This was the unusually, not even unusually, because James Bond loves his puns, but there were a lot of puns in this specific James Bond movie, most of them at the expense of Dr. Christmas Jones, played by actress Denise Richards. That's all I remember about this movie was Denise Richards was in it, and it was a lot of Christmas puns.
Remember watching it. I just don't remember that as vividly as you do, apparently.
Honestly, all of the Brosnan films kind of just blend together for me. I don't know why. Like, I remember bits. I guess I remember GoldenEye the most, but I almost attribute the game to that more than I do the movie. Even though the things I remember most about the game weren't even in the movie. I don't know. But that's not the game we're talking about. We're talking about The World Is Not Enough.
This game.
This is the part where we do our completely scientific review process. So, as always, it is a 5-category scale. It is gameplay, story, replay value, aesthetics, and the cost of value. And everything's rated on a 20-point scale, and then we take an average, et cetera, et cetera. You've been here before, unless you haven't, in which case, thanks for listening.
Welcome. But
we'll start out with gameplay. I gave the gameplay of this game 12 out of 20.
I gave it 15 out of 20, 67.5% of the points.
And I think this is the part where I feel like I'm disappointed that it wasn't GoldenEye. Because we'll get into the rest of the game. But for some reason, and I don't know why, the controls just don't feel like I remember it on this specific game. And I don't have an explanation for it, because they're not specifically bad with the exception of actually handling your inventory, which is notably bad, because you have to like hold two buttons and to go through certain menus and then use a totally different button. Just like, it's a mess when you have to juggle your gadgets, but the base gameplay is pretty standard, at least by N64 standards, first person shooter fare, where, you know, you got the joystick changes your directions and moves you forward and back. The C-pads will adjust your up and down and strafing, and the Z button pulls the trigger, which is how it should be.
Yeah, this is a great console shooter. The controls are crisp, and even with the auto-aim tracking, which in current games is a lot less noticeable. It's more subtle, I guess, is the nicer way to put it. In these games, it is very noticeable and not subtle at all. It very much auto-aims you to save you that extra 3 inches of joystick swing towards your opponent. And it's not off-putting. It would be hard to play without it, based on the control scheme, based on the Nintendo 64 controller and how games were played at the time. So it all fit together well. You're right, though. The inventory management was super clunky. But that's mostly during single player. During multiplayer, you don't have to really deal with grabbing key cards and saws and all sorts of other stuff, all your inventory to do trigger the small cutscene to get to the next part of the level, so it's not that big of a deal. This one also included bots in the multiplayer, which is great if you don't have three friends to wreck every single day.
Yeah, it had, you know, different modes and stuff like that as well in the multiplayer, like Capture the Flag and King of the Hill and stuff like that. You know, it wasn't, I don't know how to describe like why it's not as good as GoldenEye, because I mean, it's a different publisher and it almost feels like it's a different engine running it, but
it is.
It's just very, I feel like this game leans even more into the auto aim than GoldenEye did. Like it seems like the GoldenEye one is less pronounced than it is in this game, because this game you are literally playing to get the lock on from the auto aim, and you can use like you can go into a manual aiming where you bring up the reticle and do it that way. You know, you're forced to be stationary when you do that, but headshots are a big deal They do save you a lot of ammo. Otherwise, everybody's a bullet sponge. But yeah, you know, that's about it. I mean, the funny thing about this game too is like it has some of the elements of GoldenEye in it, but it's still all very, very much tied to this one license. So, which I mean, I guess isn't really part of the gameplay necessarily, but yeah, like it's missing some things. We're gonna compare this to GoldenEye a lot because it's hard not to when you got something as iconic as GoldenEye. But I mean, you know, you can get changes in elevations and stuff like that, but it was it I don't know why it just felt bad trying to deal with the changes in elevations on this game. Like you're better off fighting in a wide open level playing field. And it
Yeah.
wasn't good on GoldenEye either, so.
And there's lots of stuff that's not in GoldenEye in this one. Like there's swimming, like you can go underwater. And there's, you know, there's, so there's two, think of it this way, is there's two sequels to GoldenEye. There's this one, which is the licensed sequel. And then there's the spiritual successor, which is Perfect Dark. One is the company that made GoldenEye, Perfect Dark, made by Rare. And the game that they wanted to make in the GoldenEye sequel. And there's this one, which is the game that the people who own the intellectual property wanted to be as the sequel. So you got two very different games. You got Perfect Dark, which is GoldenEye for people who like GoldenEye. And then you have this game, which is GoldenEye for people who like new James Bond movies.
Yeah, I mean if you're yeah, that's really it is the licensing is what caused this not to be a Rare game, but EA even back in the day was still swinging that weight around a little bit. I mean now they just own everything, so they just buy the publishing company. They don't buy the rights to anything. They'll just buy your whole company. But I mean all in all, I guess it wasn't a bad experience, but it wasn't what I hoped it to be either. So, we're talking a lot about it, but I think it warrants a lot of talking about because of the differences. And it's hard to pinpoint exactly what it is that I didn't like as much. And I don't have a good answer for it, other than everything just feels a little bit slower. I think maybe that's it. I think it just feels slower. Because like GoldenEye, I remember being a faster paced game, whereas this one, everything feels a lot slower and more deliberate, and I didn't
We'll get
like it
into
as
why
much.
that is in the aesthetics as well.
Yeah. So yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, I guess that's we gave it a decent score, but it's nothing. It's I wouldn't go so far as to call it a great first person shooter, even by Nintendo 64 standards. But it's good. It's not a bad game. So, on that note, let's move on to the next category, which is the story. I gave it a 15 out of 20.
I gave it a 15 out of 20, 77.5%. I actually have you down for a 16 on this one.
Oh, did I? Oh, God. I maybe switched my numbers around. Did I give it 16? All right, then
Yep.
16. 16.
Same number.
Yeah, sorry.
77.5 is the correct percentage, though. So
Okay.
suck it. Suck it, math.
16. I had trouble reading my number. But I guess in terms of the story, it was you know, it followed pretty faithfully to the movie. So I don't want to say this was necessarily a bad James Bond movie. It's definitely not the best James Bond movie, and it's certainly not the most memorable James Bond movie. But as far as the plot goes, that is the plot of the game. So,
Yeah. And another film game, movie game, just like Rugrats in Paris last week. So this one is the plot. The plot is Bond is assigned to protect Electra King from the terrorists. Turns out that, you know, lo and behold, the person he's protecting is also working with the terrorists. and they're all using Bond and M16 to try to control the world's oil supply, using, and there's nuclear weapons, you know, because it's a Bond film. So yeah, the game's missions follow the story well, just like GoldenEye did. If you're familiar with GoldenEye, you know how this one plays out. It's chapters, there's 14 of them. And if you've seen the movie, you've played the game, and if you played the game, you've seen the movie. So
Yep. Although, do they do the puns? I don't know if they do the puns in the movie. I in the game. I don't remember. Now I'm disappointed. I should have paid more attention
to puns, yeah. Could
to
you
puns.
forget the gameplay and the things that you would
Yeah.
notice as a gamer? Only puns about Denise Richards and her very punny name.
Hey, you know, Christmas comes early sometimes. I don't know. James Bond that shit up. So yeah, I mean, like I said, it was a movie title about a very, very average James Bond film. So
But look at
I
the
mean,
story, the story score we gave it.
by Nintendo 64 standards, this is a good fucking story.
Yeah.
Like, this is Oscar-worthy material by the Nintendo 64 story writing standards that have been set by not only every game that we've played so far, but by literally every game that came out on the system, including your favorite Quest 64. But yeah, so I mean, honestly, this is going to be one of the higher rated stories in the thing probably. So if you're really into video games for a coherent narrative that is somewhat entertaining, this is about as good as it's going to get.
Yep, they hit the, they went for the trifecta. They have a story. The game sticks to the story. And it has voice acting. So
Yeah.
that's this is it. This is the pinnacle of N64. This is all three things. They it's the triple crown of N64 story scores from the Faro Wizards. This is what you get. This is what we're aiming for. This is the jam. I don't know how else to compliment it without talking about how I wish there was, it was post-apocalyptic and there was dinosaurs and it was in space. But
Well, there were nukes, so it's like pre-apocalyptic, but it never gets to apocalypse. Spoiler alert, James Bond to continue make 14 other movies after. So, yes.
da
Okay.
da
I guess
da.
we'll do our normal break here and we'll come back with the rest of this review.
Da-da-da.
Reason? Or are you just hoping for a glimmer? And you are?
Mikhail Arkov, Russian Atomic Energy Department. Miss.
Dr. Jones. Christmas Jones. And don't make any jokes, I've heard them all.
Backity back. All right, next category is the replay value of this game. I gave it. I'm pausing here because I want to make sure I gave you the score that I gave you.
16.
16 out of 20.
I gave it a 14 out of 20, 75% of the points.
Okay. Well, yeah, replay value. The single player is actually fun, and I could see being worthwhile a couple playthroughs, especially if you bring the difficulty up. But obviously, once again, multiplayer is where you're going to get the life out of this game. There are lots of modes. There's Capture the Hill, there's like the hacking mode where you have to like upload certain things to certain points or whatever. There's like a team-based, I don't know what to call it, like deathmatch mode or whatever. So there's a lot of different options in that regard. The levels are a little bit limited and honestly a little bit lackluster. They don't feel as well designed or well planned out as, not all of them at least, as a lot of the GoldenEye ones did. in my opinion. But I mean, as you mentioned earlier, there are bots in this one, so you could, in theory, you know, even if you don't have someone else to play with, continue to play the multiplayer and get that kind of experience. The only biggest criticism I had is they didn't have quite as much of the weapon, like, customization, and they didn't have the variety of weapons that came with GoldenEye. It's pretty much stuff that's exclusive to the movie itself, so it's not nearly as exciting or interesting as a game like GoldenEye that took a lot of things from other James Bond films and threw it into the mix. This is strictly the licensed product. So
yeah, but much like GoldenEye, if you have people to play with, you're going to get an incredible amount of replay out of this game. The multiplayer shooters like this is the reason that people bought N64s. Like this game, four-player sports games, four-player wrestling games, like that's why people bought this. It had the four controller ports. This is begging for you to have your friends over and just scream at each other for hours. And there's endless replay in that. If your friends are into it and you're into it, play it forever. Like you said, the single player has a lot of extra challenges. If you're a GoldenEye veteran, you know exactly what we're talking about. There's three difficulty levels. There's all sorts of like extra things. Like if you beat a level in 2 minutes and 20 seconds, you get big stupid heads on your characters in multiplayer. Like they do that all over the place, just like in GoldenEye. So if you want to unlock this stuff, you have to play the single player. At the bare minimum, you have to play through the single player to unlock all of the multiplayer levels and all the characters and all that stuff. So that's to your advantage. So that adds more replay because you're trying to play the game so you can play the game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, like I said, this is a full experience game. It doesn't feel like some of these other ones where you got some sort of like trimmed down version of a real game. This game has all the things you come to expect out of like a modern AAA title, but you know, N64 era. So it's definitely not a low budget indie game. I mean, there was clearly a lot of work put into this game. So, and you know, you get that on the back end of it. So it's definitely got a lot of opportunity to replay and still enjoy past your initial, you know, experience with it. So
yeah, and fuck your friends. If you know they like GoldenEye and they don't want to come over and play this, get new friends. Get new friends that like this game. Or get friends that like Perfect Dark and buy both of those games. But if they don't like it, fuck your friends. Get new friends. That's important. No. That's important for N64 era. So there's four controller ports. If you had more than four friends, you pick the four friends that want to play N64. Those are your best friends. Fuck the rest of them.
This is the game that all of the friends that say Perfect Dark is overrated, this is the one they have to play. You don't have a choice. You don't
get this to play. Is it. Yep. This is what you wanted.
Yep. You missed out.
Still fuck your friends, though.
Yeah, fuck
like, your if you have shitty friends, just get the fuck out. Get new friends.
You're very hostile. Very hostile.
Well, I mean, we just played a shooting game. I've had a lot of pizza today.
a lot of soda and Mountain Dew and first-person shooters. That's how violence is created, right?
Yep.
Video games lead to violence.
Yeah, that's it. This is it.
Okay, moving on to the next category of aesthetics. I gave the game a 17 out of 20.
I gave this one a 16 out of 20, 82.5% of the points.
This, as we mentioned, is a very polished game. The levels are not necessarily the multiplayer levels, but the single player game. Those actual levels are very well done. A lot of interactive environment, doors and stuff like that. The character models are good. They're a little less blocky than previous, like GoldenEye and previous like I guess 3D modeled characters are. They're not, I mean, they're still clearly polygons with a mask wrapped around them, but they're a little better. You could definitely see, like I said, the system starting to reach its potential with this game. The frame rate runs good. It's smooth. It even has options in the multiplayer, and I think maybe in the single player, to turn like the level of detail on the actual guns up, which I assume means that it's taking more graphical power and probably affects frame rate, but you can actually adjust the level of detail on the weapons themselves. So, I mean, there was a lot of care put into it. And then, as you mentioned, voice acting, that was there. You know, a lot of lines directly from the movie were there. So, you know, a very quality, well-made game.
So the engine of this game was designed by a company called Eurocom, and the engine that they designed and used for this game was actually going to be for GameCube. They were actually already working on the next generation of systems in 2000 when this game came out. And they decided instead, when EA, because like you said, there's some mega conglomerate that kills and eats the world and steals your babies and all the other stuff, convinced them to use their GameCube developed engine to instead adapt this game to the strengths of the Nintendo 64. So that's how we got all of those cool like particle explosion effects and smoke and fog and the super long draw rate, which was another thing in this. You could see damn near across the level at any point. And it all of this stuff went off without any frame rate suffering at all. So awesome. Great. It just wasn't GoldenEye.
Yeah, I mean, and there were some really, really good looking like lighting effects and stuff like that. And like you said, like fog and things of that nature. So it definitely had the makings of like, this is what Nintendo 64 was building to, you know, past all of the early attempts at 3D modeling games and stuff like that. This is a polished version of that. So a very good example of what this system had the capability of doing. I mean, it's not perfect. And, you know, it does still struggle with the fact that it's a cartridge and cartridges can't process sound. So everything always sounds like it's, you know, muffled and digitized. So you don't get that clean, crisp sound. But it does have, like, you know, the James Bond music soundtrack and everything you'd expect out of it. So, I mean, like I said, generally, this is a very, very, like, good movie title.
At least the only thing that I knocked this one for, which is why I gave it a less score than you for whatever reason, other than this specific thing. So like John Cleese and all the other people that were in the movie then voice acted this game, but Pierce Brosnan didn't. They had Tim Bentnick come in and do the voice of James Bond in the game. So the only person missing from the movie for the game was James Bond. Like, what the fuck?
I've seen some of Pierce Brosnan's like post James Bond career movies, and like, now you're getting picky? Oh shit. That's funny. I did not notice that. And for what it's worth, the James Bond voice actor does a passable job, because I would not have necessarily picked up on it, mostly because, you know, you're rendering sound through the Nintendo 64 chipset and it sounds like garbage even if it's good. So,
but just imagine being like John Cleese and like you call him into the studio and like, all right, we're recording for this video game, and he's like, well, where's Pierce? And we're like, he's not coming.
You know,
I'm John Cleese.
I think John Cleese would probably do like something weird like that anyway.
I'm surprised he didn't, like, say he would do James Bond as well. Oh, we got this.
Well, that's fun facts. Fun Nintendo 64 port.
That's what we're here for. Fun facts. We're educating you on a system that we do enjoy on numerous levels.
Well, I mean,
No.
We're not.
We like it. People, we like this. We like it, people.
We have to like.
We like what we do, much like Polaris snowmobiles.
I'm contractually obligated to like Nintendo 64 for the sake of this podcast until we start getting that Joe Rogan money.
When you forget what systems you like.
Yeah. I'll like whatever I'm told to like for Joe Rogan money. In any case, move on to the cost versus value portion of the review. Now, the cost I had was around $17.50.
Yeah.
That's what you came up with too?
Yep, $17.63 for the blue plastic World Is Not Enough cartridge.
Right. There were variants on this one. The blue one's the standard, right?
Yep. And it's more expensive. The gray one, which once again, lazy end of production, let's throw it in the gray, actually runs about $14.32 and it's the exact same game. So you could get it for less on the same system, or, you know, 2 for $30 or whatever you want to go for the combo. I don't have both, but I'm going to now that I see how cheap the gray one is right now.
The boxed version of this one is pretty pricey still. So this was
the box version of every game is pricey. I feel like you said that now, like three straight. They're all expensive, Alvin. They're always expensive. But
this one's more. Like this one is substantially more than Powerpuff Girls.
That's true.
Like substantially more. And sure. You know, that's just something worth noting.
There so what are, score did you give all. This? What score are you going to give this?
Oh, yeah, that's right. We do scores. I gave it 11 out of 20.
I gave it 12 out of 20, 57.5. So with all the things that we've talked about, it's still worth your money. This is above 50%. That's big numbers for us because, honestly, for me to give something a 10 is pretty hard. So now,
this is the way to play this game. Obviously, Nintendo 64 had the better version. There's no cheaper one out there. The cost is like half that of GoldenEye, which I'm still floored by the going rate for GoldenEye copies right now, considering how many of them exist in the world.
Yeah, we're pushing like $40. Like I said, the first party and second party, like Rare, Midway, the AAA games right now, don't even bother buying them. If you're listening to this podcast, we haven't reviewed any of those except for Donkey Kong and now this game. Don't buy these games right now. Just wait. Just let COVID-19 pass. Let people spend their money and get them when they're back down to earth.
I still cannot believe because I know for a fact I've gone to like rummage sales where GoldenEye was like $10.
You could go to regular retail. We have excellent stores. Press start, you know, start over, Game Trade by us. Let's plug all three of them. We'll give them a free plug. Next one's not free, guys. If you're listening to this, I want advertisement dollars.
Mojo Games.
Yeah, Mojo. You could get GoldenEye for $20-$25, and that's, you know, they bothered to clean it up for you, crisp her up, put her in the case, like, you know, that's retail.
Yep.
And $40 ain't the jam.
Nope. Private sales of these games are through the roof, and as this one in particular goes up in value, be very aware of reproductions, not necessarily of this one, but GoldenEye. because that one, like I said, there's a lot of them out there, but if they're selling at $40 a pop, you're probably going to start seeing them.
Yep. There are some repros of GoldenEye already, but yeah, like you said, there'll be more. So yeah, keep an eye out for this one. If you like GoldenEye, there's no reason to not buy this game. I mean, it's just another shooter. It gives you a little more variety off because you're not going to get the same levels because those levels went with Rare to Perfect Dark. So those game designs are on a different game. So this is something completely different. It's just if you have a group of friends that still plays N64 games, pick this one up. Go for it.
Yeah, you can definitely justify buying it. Like I said, especially since right now it's still at a lower price point. So, yeah.
Bam-o.
Wham bam.
Wham bam, let's wrap this up.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of scores are we looking at?
I gave this one a 72. You gave this one a 72. We gave this one a 72.
So that's going to put it firmly in the top 10.
Number two.
So second best game that we've reviewed thus far. So now you get to change your chart.
I'm not changing it. That's never changing.
You're just going to start scribbling it out and writing the other one over it?
No, I'll put it in. I got it. We got to get. That's two straight. Well, it's two straight weeks where we had to add one onto it now. So now it's all mishmashed anyway. But yeah, now the numbers are going up. We're starting to see real games coming out of the loud jar. The loud jar is gracing us with slightly better games after Alvin complained for 3 weeks about the games he had to play.
Well, I complained about this one last week too, but it turns out it was better than I remembered it being.
Yeah.
So, yay, we're forgiving it.
And Metacritic, same thing. They liked it. This got an aggregate of 81%. There were some complaints, but most of them are not GoldenEye style type complaints. You know, the people who wax nostalgic about the only game they played on the system before this was the second game they played. Even this is not limited to everyday normal people. That is also video game reviewers. So.
Yeah, this game had a very big hurdle to cross, but it still did well. Like, I mean, it was well received at the time. And keep in mind, like I said, all these reviews were done at the time. So, you know, what we're looking at now is, has it held up? And this one did a reasonably good job of holding up.
Yeah, that was then. We are now. We are the future. Right. That is the past. We'll look at the Metacritic scores for you, but listen to us because we are way smarter than the people who are paid to do this because we are not getting paid to do this at all. So what's the incentive? Integrity.
$50,000.
Integrity until then. But after $50,000, all integrity goes out the window along with recurring episodes of the podcast.
Right. But, yeah, so... We have a tie, so we don't know how to deal with
the
tie.
We've never planned for this.
Which is bizarre because there's only so many points we can give, and there's a lot of games. So a tie was inevitable, but here we are. How we picking the loud jar this week?
You just pick it.
You just do it. You just do it.
Let's just do it.
Just do it.
All right. I'm doing it. It is number 213.
213 is
Star Soldier Vanishing Earth.
Star Soldier Vanishing Earth. So, as one of the least popular games on the system, we're going to get to explore something a little bit new. I'm assuming this is the bullet hell genre of game.
Yeah, shoot 'em up, like literally shooting up the screen from the bottom to the top.
Yes.
Much like Pitbull.
like 1942 and Raiden and you know, Ikaruga, all those very popular Japanese games that give you a spaceship or aircraft to throw millions of bullets at millions of bullets coming at you, and that you have to like have cat-like reflexes to be able to win at. And so, I mean, I honestly like the genre of game. I'm not particularly good at it, but I enjoy them. So I'm excited. I don't know what I'm going to end up giving this one, because this is totally fresh to me. Never even knew it existed.
Yep, same. There's a lot of these games. Like, just because I own them, do you think I sat down and have played everything? Fuck no.
Yes. I assumed you played every game that you ever bought, because otherwise, why would you buy it? I know why you bought it.
Because I'm stupid. Because I set a goal and attempted to accomplish it.
And then accomplished it. Yeah. Almost.
Yeah. We're almost there. We're almost there, guys. So what? See, now we're jinxed. Yeah. Double jinxed. Just like our score.
Everything's tied.
So what do you want to do about the power trip?
Let's do a double power trip. We'll both talk about a thing. One thing.
I like it. Combo power trip. Duo power trip.
Power trip. Okay, I'm going to stop it here and restart, because we got to discuss how we're going to do this.
Yes.
Okay, well, this impromptu weird power trip is going to be both of us talking on a single topic for a minute. So we decided Mike will take the first 30 seconds and then I'll take the second 30 seconds, and hopefully that works. As I mean, it doesn't have to work. This is our shit. This is for us.
Yeah.
So fuck the rules. Fuck everything. Fuck books.
Yeah.
We're going to talk for a minute about something that, hey, maybe we both like this time.
Yeah. It's a positive power trip.
Positive power trip. So I will give you a 5-second countdown and we'll go. How's that sound?
Yeah, do it.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Mitch Hedberg might be the greatest comedian of our generation, the previous generation, and future generations. He, I respect that he was so funny without ever forcing it. I don't know how much he connected with his audience, which is something that I resonate with doing this podcast, as much as he just did his own thing. And his one-liners were the best of all time, such as, a severed foot is a perfect stocking stuffer. And the depressing time thing about tennis is, damn it.
Yeah, no more
joke. Go! Do it!
I'm going to start it. I'm gonna take my full 30 seconds starting right now. So the thing I liked about him is that this is a guy who is always very down to earth, very humble. Even though he was getting a lot of, you know, recognition within the community, he still did a ton to help people out. Like, he helped launch Mike Birbiglia's career. He helped out people like Hannibal Buress and things like that, gave them exposure when they weren't getting any. So all around, pretty good guy. It's a tragedy that drugs took his life so early, because he's the kind of comedian that people should be admiring.
Time.
All right.
Yeah.
Do your joke. Yeah. Do your joke. Do the Hedberg bit, because you can't rush Hedberg's jokes. That's kind of.
I only did one.
I know, but you
got. I've got more. I've got more than I love.
You can do one more. I'll let you do one.
Oh,
more.
Oh, come on! I've got. Can I do two? You can do one. Okay, I'll do one. Then you do one. Then I'll do another one.
I'm not prepared. I don't have. Look, I mean, the thing about his jokes is that the delivery was everything, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny, if you watch the unedited version of his first Comedy Central stand-up thing, it is a fucking nightmare, because the crowd is just not in on it at all.
But then but by the end of it, they're totally like, this is what he does, and they think it's hilarious. Like, and he's just smiling the whole time, adjusting his glasses.
I mean, he had, I mean, huge stage fright. I mean, this guy overcame a lot of stuff. I mean, he was born with a heart defect. You know, he was constantly on drugs, like all the time. And like I said, that was probably the biggest tragedy, is that he knew he had a problem. Everyone knew he had a problem, but he insisted he could handle his problem. And, you know, that's kind of the life of the privileged life of a celebrity, is that people assume that you can take care of yourself. And honestly, he just didn't get that. Didn't get the help he needed. Not probably for lack of trying. It's just his response to the drug use was, I'm just not going to talk about it as much. That'll make you guys happy. And that's pretty much what he did. And that's really, like I said, a tragic end. But I mean, this is a guy who, I mean, well, hopefully more than just because he died early, but you know, there was no sex scandal with him. He was not some sort of like creep. He was always the first guy to like try and stand up and help somebody else. So good guy. Yep. Do you want to do a joke? You can do it.
I got a couple that make me feel better, especially because we kind of did it. This was kind of somber because obviously he has passed away, but man, we tell these jokes to each other all the time. We have never stopped for years. So this is soft. It's a big soft spot. Ah, the depressing thing about tennis is I will never be as good as a wall.
a solid analysis. Or wasn't it ping pong? I thought it was table tennis.
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure it was table.
I'm sorry.
you had one shot.
Yep. Okay, I'll do one more then. This one I know. This one, because I tell this one. So I like vending machines because snacks are better when they fall. If I buy a candy bar at a store, oftentimes I will drop it just so it achieves maximum flavor potential.
All I can ever think of, if you put me on the spot, is this jacket is dry clean only. That means it's dirty.
Yeah. And, you know, poetically, one of his jokes was, I used to do drugs. I still do, but I used to as well.
Yeah. You know? I like the FedEx. I like the FedEx guy because he's a drug dealer and he don't even know it.
Oh, Mitch Hedberg. There's nobody. I mean, I would love to say somebody needs to like pick up where he left off. Like somebody needs to like harness that type of comedy. But I don't. It doesn't. He told every good joke that was ever going to be delivered like that anyway already. So,
well, I mean, he was a prolific writer. Like he wrote constantly. He was always like his wife tells stories about, he would actually like go to like public places. Like he would go to like retail stores and just hang out and listen to people and, you know, write jokes based off that. Like it was all very observational. But like it always had its own like absurdist slant to it. So, I mean, he did have, like I said, a lot of recognition with the community. I mean, George Carlin was a big fan of his. Obviously, Letterman was a big fan because they had him on like who knows how many times.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was being billed as like the next Jerry Seinfeld. And like I said, he was a very, very adamant, like hardworking comedian. But he never said no to anything. And it's unfortunate his life was cut short because, you know, there were plenty of opportunities. People were looking to give him more opportunities. He actually wrote like a whole movie about like a shitty Mexican restaurant in Minnesota, but apparently it was like not great because whenever they had to smoke pot in the movie, they actually smoked pot. So by the time it was all said and done, like I think some of the Broken Lizard guys were helping him out with it and stuff too. So it exists, but it was never like formally published. Like it made it to Sundance and it was just a big mess because everybody was super fucking high the whole time.
So if you have never seen any Mitch Hedberg stand up, God, do yourself a favor. Set yourself aside 20 to 30 minutes, and just YouTube him and watch him, and it will make your day so much better to know that somebody could string jokes together for that long without any of them having anything to do with the previous joke. Because that was, I mean, when you say that, like, next Jerry Seinfeld, you know, Seinfeld did a lot of observational humor, but he still kind of like flowed the thing from beginning to end. Mitch tells a joke, adjusts his glasses, takes a drink of water, moves the stool, and then tells another joke. And then tells another joke, and then adjusts his hair and tells another joke. It's so refreshing.
I think that's part of it. It was like, as far as like a comedian for our generation is, he was so in touch with the just like that absurdity, that like that absurdism that really kind of resonates. Like, if you've grown up, like if you're our age, you probably are familiar with like all of the Adult Swim cartoons and all of the shows that stemmed from that. And that's a lot of, you know, that just the absurd, like things don't make sense. Like that shit just happens. But that, you know, it can be funny, but it's not necessarily for everybody. But I think he made it really relatable to a lot of people.
He would fit in so well in the current culture too. Like, I feel like I run my personal Facebook page the way that he would run his. Like, if you can't, the same with Twitter. Think how much he would just fucking kill it on Twitter. Like, you could just turn on your phone and you see his one-liner of the day. Like, his, you know, because he would just write on Twitter. God, that would be so perfect. Like,
yeah,
his one thing and then never again. Like,
yeah, his stand-up would have been really good for a Twitter audience, that's for sure. Because, yeah, every joke was just kind of a self-contained thing. And Dog agrees.
Yeah, Seamus is about it.
He agrees.
Oh, so yeah, good ending to an episode. I feel good about this. I feel good about Mitch. I miss Mitch, but I feel good thinking about him.
I guess we can always do power trips that are not necessarily us bitching about shit.
No, this refreshing dual power trip was nice, but I'm still angry all the time because that's my secret.
I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed in everything. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed in the world.
Yeah. Cool. Let's end it there. I feel like that's a good solid ending. Good and bad. Bye, guys.
Bye.
I think they could take sesame seeds off the market and I wouldn't even care. I can't imagine 5 years from now saying, "Damn, remember sesame seeds? What happened? All the buns are blank." They're gonna have to change that McDonald's song. 2 all beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a bun.